morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves, or I should say good afternoon whenever you're listening to it. It is Saturday, May 9th here in Traverse City, Michigan. I'm having a good day. Other than I just bailed. I was in my garage like an hour ago putting my hockey tarp away for the winter. Caught my foot on just a random pipe that was sticking up, and I could not hold on to anything. And my hand got all bashed up. My elbows all dinged up. My knees. The big guy went down hard. And when you're 6'8", 270 pounds, there's no graceful way to fall. And when you're 40 years old, there's no graceful way to get up. And so I was just a complete mess. I just kind of sat there. My buddy was trying to talk to me. I'm like, just don't say a word. Just leave me alone. Just let me be. Let me regroup. But I'm all better. No broken bones, no worse for wear. Back at it, finally doing a podcast. I threw around the idea of doing a live stream last night. I was chatting with some of my guys on Patreon, on my Slack channel. And if you're not on my Patreon, which many of you are not, how dare you? But I'll get over it. So anyways, I was saying, well, let's do a live stream last night. And I didn't do it. I obviously didn't do it. We got into stuff at home with the kids. And next thing I know, I'm sleeping, passed out after the Sabres Montreal game because I was just tired. So here we are Saturday morning. I'm revitalized. And who else is revitalized? The Montreal Canadiens. Because what a bounce back game in game two for that team. I called it. And I know a lot of other people were talking about it, but I'm the one who called it first. I'll take credit for that. They were going to have a letdown. And coming off a big game seven win versus the Tampa Bay Lightning, the vaunted Tampa Bay Lightning, everybody kind of christened them the team to come out of the East. They're going to get to the Stanley Cup final. Florida's not there. Toronto's not there. The pathway was easy. Well, the Montreal Canadiens said, not this season, baby. It's our season. They win in game seven. And you're apt, you're bound, it's natural to have some sort of letdown. And I talked about this a couple shows ago, coming into game one in Buffalo. It's hard to keep that momentum. It's hard to keep that emotion. It's hard to keep that level, especially when you're at that game seven. You know, you're all jacked up. And then obviously game one happened and the Sabres just walked all over them. They were the better team from the drop of the puck, and they sustained it throughout the whole game. And they won the game. Going into game two, you knew Montreal was going to have a pushback. You just didn't know how much, right? Because the Sabres are a good team. In the regular season, these teams only finished, I think, a couple points away from each other. They're very familiar with each other. So how much of a pushback can you have when you've played each other so much, when you know each other's tendencies, when you've pre-scouted? What more can you do to push back if the other team knows you, your ins, your outs, everything? Well, they just outworked the Sabres from the start of this game to the very finish of this game. They were by far the better team from every facet of the game. We're talking penalty kill, power play, everything. And the things that I noticed the most, and I'll try to push through this because I got a comment in my YouTube section criticizing me about maybe talking too much. I don't understand, but I'll try to be a little more succinct as I talk about not talking a lot, which is very ironic. But the faceoff circle. Montreal completely dominated in the faceoff dot, and that is mainly because of Philip Deneau. Philip Deneau that's what he does. He was brought to Montreal from LA to dominate in the faceoff circle, and he has done that throughout his career, and he has now continued to do that with the Montreal Canadiens. He's clipping along at around 60-some percent in these playoffs, and last night playing the Sabres, they were dominant. And puck control is so huge. Whether it's killing a penalty, you win the draw, you ice it down, that kills 20, 30 seconds. You're on a power play, you win the draw, that gives you a full 2 minutes in the zone. Start of a period, defensive zone draws, offensive zone draws. It's so critical to get that initial faceoff, to get that puck control, because teams these days are so good at controlling the puck. Puck possession is an all-time high in the history of the 100 years of hockey. When I played, it was back in the caveman years where you wanted to dump it in. You wanted to give up the puck. Nowadays, that's a luxury to get the puck, so you hold on to it. And Philip Deneau is such an asset for these Montreal Canadiens. Yes, I know he does other things. He's a very good defensive forward. He chips in offensively. The main reason he is on this team is to win faceoffs. And he is dominating in the faceoff dot versus the Buffalo Sabres in the first round. So that is a huge, huge deal in this series. He's winning faceoffs. They're scoring goals. They're winning every loose puck, every 50-50 puck. Montreal dominated this game. And Alex Newhook was fantastic. he was all over the ice. Jake Evans had a fantastic game, a beautiful dish to him for a goal. Every facet of this game, like I mentioned, they were dominant, especially in the crowd. It felt like a home game for the Montreal Canadiens, and I'm a Buffalo guy. Like, I was raised right near there. I played for the Sabres. I love going back and supporting the Sabres, but we need to do something about that Montreal crowd. And I can't be the only one who noticed whenever Montreal scored the ovation that they received. It's insane. It was like a home game. Montreal scores and the crowd goes wild. So for game five, the Sabres organization needs to do something to limit those tickets being sold to people not from Buffalo, not from New York State, not from the area. I don't know what to do. I don't know how you go about doing that, but you need to do it. I know other teams have done this in the past to limit visiting fans from coming in. It's not like there's not enough people in Buffalo who would go to the game. There's thousands of people probably lined up around the block to get a ticket to this game. They're one of the greatest fan bases sporting across the spectrum. So they support everything. So it's a little depressing, especially for the Sabres guys, when the other team scores and it's just the crowd goes wild. And then it was also a little disappointing at the end of the game. They're starting to get on the Sabres a little bit. They leave early. It's like, come on, you guys. We're in the second round. It's 1-1. Let's support our team a little bit. But back to the game. What an answer by Montreal. This is going to be a hell of a series. I fully anticipate this going seven games. These are two evenly matched teams. Buffalo will punch back. Montreal will answer. It's going to go back and forth the whole series, hopefully, and we will get a game seven because these are two fantastic teams. Staying in the East, Philly, Carolina. Okay, and I want to get to this, and I'll get to it now. Carolina obviously has played seven games in the playoffs. They are now 7-0. Do any of you really think that they are legit Stanley Cup contenders based off of the first seven games? And be honest. Yes, I know they're 7-0. But does your thought process on them, has it changed since the start of the playoffs? Because at the start of this playoffs, I said, I don't think they're a Stanley Cup contender. In the Eastern Conference, I really only had two or three teams that I thought could win the Stanley Cup. One was Tampa Bay. One was Buffalo. And I guess maybe it was Carolina, maybe. But I wasn't really sold on them. It was Buffalo and it was Tampa Bay and then Carolina. Has my opinion changed on Carolina based on their start going 7-0, sweeping Ottawa, now on the verge of sweeping Philadelphia? No, it hasn't. In my opinion, Philadelphia could be up 2-1 in this series. The only reason why Philadelphia is not winning this series, their top guys cannot score. And I know there's a lot of other teams that I can put in this category. Montreal, for instance, their top guys are not scoring whatsoever. Cole Caulfield, Juraj Slafkovský have nothing. Ivan Demidov has done nothing in these playoffs. Noah Dobson has done absolutely nothing in these playoffs. When you look at their stats, it's Alex Newhook and Nick Suzuki and Lane Hudson are the only three guys who are producing. Everybody else has just put up a goose egg. Cole Caulfield, your 50-goal scorer, I think he has one goal in these playoffs. Ivan Demidov has 0 goals. He has 2 points. That's not going to cut it when you get to the Eastern Conference Finals, if you do. And then hopefully after that, the Stanley Cup Finals. You need your top guys to score. Yes, it's good to have secondary scoring. But your leading scorers can't be Caden Gooley. They can't be Kirby Dach and Zachary Bolduc. You need to have your 4 or 5 juggernaut superstars leading the charge. And right now, Slafkovský and Anderson and Caulfield and all Demidov, these guys, they're not useless, but they are not doing anything at all. But moving on to the Philadelphia Flyers, they're even worse than the Montreal Canadiens. Trevor Zegras is leading the way with 5 points. He's tied with Rasmus Ristolainen, friend of the show, Rasmus Ristolainen, with 5 points. They played 9 NHL playoff games, a couple of those going into overtime. They played enough minutes to score points. And your leading scorer tied for first is Rasmus Ristolainen. In the regular season, it was Konechny, it was Zegras, it was Tippett, it was Michkov, it was Dvorak, it was Noah Cates. Those were the guys who got you here. Those were the guys who put points on the board. Come playoff time, Zegras should have double this, if not triple this, with the amount of chances that he's gotten. But your leading scorers are Ristolainen, Drysdale, Couturier, Porter Malone, who I know is the rookie. Where are you, Owen Tippett? Where are you, Matvei Michkov? Where are you, anybody And even those guys who are at the top of their roster getting points, you got 5 points, you got 4 points, you got 3 points. Nobody is producing for the Philadelphia Flyers. And the sad part is, it's not that they're getting, you know, shut out. They're getting glorious chances. Travis Konecny single-handedly could have had himself a 2-1 lead in this series. He had a beautiful chance in overtime in game two, a breakaway chance. He doesn't finish. Trevor Zegras has had so many breakaway chances, I can't even figure it out. Porter Malone is passing up surefire goals to pass to other guys when he could have had grade A opportunities. Sean Couturier's right there. Your top guys are getting opportunities, but they're not finishing. And then there's Matvei Michkov, who has completely just disappeared in these playoffs. And I know Rick Tocchet has sat him down. He's limited his minutes, but holy hell, the guy has one assist in 8 games. One assist in 8 games for a player who in the regular season was your third leading scorer behind Konecny and Zegras. That's not good enough. And then Owen Tippett, who was tied with Michkov in the regular season with 51 points, 2 points, 1 goal, 1 assist. Now, I don't know if they're hurt. I think Owen Tippett is dealing with some things. It doesn't excuse you from not producing. I'm sorry. Like, just suck it up and put some points on the board or get out of the way. This is why you're down 3-0 to the Carolina Hurricanes, because Carolina isn't doing anything spectacular to win the series. They really aren't. You're both getting the grade A chances. You're both getting opportunities. The only thing that's different is you're not bearing these chances. Freddie Anderson is playing very, very good. Dan Vladar is playing very, very good, but Carolina's putting in their rebounds. They're getting a couple, you know, power play goals here and there, and they're just producing on their opportunities. And Philadelphia, at the end of the series, if they lose at 4-0, which they're on the brink of doing, the only one that they can blame is themselves. Carolina is, in my opinion, not a better team than the Philadelphia Flyers. Not at all. I think they're very evenly matched. When you watch the game just from the basic eye test, it's pretty even. Both teams are getting opportunities. They're both pretty stingy defensively. It's not a clean game by any means, but they're both getting chances. Carolina's bearing their opportunities. Philadelphia's not bearing their opportunities. So at the end of the day, and rightfully so, Rick Tocchet just yelling at Trevor Zegras. He's probably frustrated. Score the damn goal or don't give up opportunities. So going back to my original question, do I think Carolina is a different team and should I just vault them to the top of the Eastern Conference standings for Stanley Cup contention? No. Colorado will most likely come out of the West. They are an absolute juggernaut. They have no weaknesses. The teams in the East who I think could match up with that, it's first of all, the Buffalo Sabres, I feel like have the best opportunity to match up versus Colorado Avalanche. Then it's the Montreal Canadiens. And then it's Carolina, Philadelphia, who neither of those teams will have a chance against the Colorado Avalanche. I think the two teams up north in the Eastern Conference have a better opportunity. Carolina, yeah, 7-0. That's fantastic. It's a good story. Could this be a detriment to them coming into the Eastern Conference Finals and Stanley Cup Finals because they've absolutely rolled through the first two rounds of the playoffs? I don't buy into that. I don't buy into that one bit. But I do think the top guys, and we talked about Montreal, we talked about Philadelphia, Carolina's top guys are just as bad. And I always say, oh, you need depth. You need depth. Yes, depth to go along with your top guys producing. And when you look at the first line for Carolina in the regular season, very, very solid. Seth Jarvis, friend of the show, Sebastian Aho, Andrei Svechnikov, who's been healthy. It's been nice. Logan Stankoven, Jackson Blake, Taylor Hall, Nikolai Ehlers. I know I was just going to do the first line, but all of those guys can shuffle through and be first line guys. They have a very deep roster. But come playoff time, the top three guys have just disappeared completely whatsoever. Sebastian Aho, where are you? Seth Jarvis, where are you? Andrei Svechnikov just scored his first goal of the playoffs last game. Where are you? He's got 3 points. Jarvis has 4 points. Who else did I say? Aho has 4 points. It's not good enough. And this is the reason why year after year after year, myself and a lot of other people have said, you need to have that needle maker. You need a guy who can create, who can put points on the board, who can do it consistently, who can do it on the playoffs. Because year after year after year, and a lot of the guys in my Slack channel are Carolina Hurricanes fans, they're going to hate this. Year after year, we get to this point of the playoffs, and we're here a lot if we're Hurricanes fans. You have nobody who can put the puck in crunch time. Who is it going to be? Is it Taylor Hall? He's leading your team with 9 points. I don't think it's Taylor Hall. Is it Jackson Blake? He's got 8 in 7 games. That's great. Stankoven has 6 goals. That's awesome. He could be the guy, but it's not Sebastian Aho. It's not Svechnikov. And I hate to say it, it's not Seth Jarvis. It's not Ehlers, who they brought in and gave him a big bag to come to Carolina. Who is it? I don't know. I don't think they have that guy in their roster. They don't have that answer. So that's the reason I've been screaming from the mountaintop. And they went out and they got Gensel. They went out and they got Rantanen. Those guys didn't want to stay. So here we are again. A new iteration, a new season, same problem. Freddie Anderson's been playing great, which has been another issue for them in years past. He's playing lights out. We need to have that consistent scoring. We need those big guys to step up. Yes, it's easy to do it against Philadelphia. It's very easy to do it against Ottawa. The next series won't be as easy. Buffalo and Montreal are very good teams. And they will score opportunistic goals. They are deep. They have guys who can score. They have good goaltending. They have very good defensemen. Buffalo and Montreal arguably have the best decor left in these playoffs. Very, very solid. So, no, I'm not sold on Carolina yet. Not by any chance of the word. Moving on. We're going to touch on the Toronto Maple Leafs. Again, unfortunately, we have to do this. They have won the number one overall pick. I'm sure everybody knows it. They had 8.5% odds coming into the lottery. Where are they going to fall? Well, lo and behold, Gary Bettman, the little rat son of a gun, Gary Bettman, the little weasel. We all hate him. We all know him. He rigged this draft, and he pulls out the number 12 ping pong ball, and it says the Toronto Maple Leafs, and all of a sudden, everything is gone. Everything is wiped off the slate from the last year, from the last offseason ago, Mitch Marner, all the drama, the Austin Matthews, everything that we've gone through, the Berube, the tree living, everything. All is forgotten. The John Shaika hiring, where everybody was on the fence about it, most people didn't agree with it. Everything is gone now. All is right in the world. We are back to planning the parade. We are back to no more rebuild. Toronto will now win the Stanley Cup because they have gotten the number one overall pick, and it will be Gavin McKenna from Penn State, the forward who is the new Uber Wonder Kid, who will slot into Toronto's lineup, fill out the gaping hole left by Mitch Marner. Now you got Matthews, you got Nyes, you got Nylander, you got Tavares, you got Domi, you got the young Easton Cowan. The top six is back together again. Let's press reset on this whole panic button. Everything all is right in the world. Does this fix Toronto's problems? Yeah. But let me ask you this. Let me pose you this question. What were Toronto's problems? When you get down to the core of this team, was it goal scoring? No, not really. Was it, playmaking ability? No. I don't think that's a huge issue on the Toronto Maple Leafs. They have talent oozing out of their ears. They can go goal for goal with a lot of teams in the NHL. They have that ability. The issue with this team was defense. The issue with this team was goaltending. The issue with this team was structure. The issue with this team was discipline and sustaining that style of play for 60 minutes. We saw glimpses of it. Craig Berube has tried to implement his style ever since he's been in Toronto, and it hasn't really worked. So, that being said, does Gavin McKenna all of a sudden switch the trajectory or the narrative in Toronto going from, are we going to rebuild? Are we going to retool? What do we do? Does him coming to this team change that? And the answer is yes, because you have to change that. Matthew Schaefer went to the New York Islanders this past season, and everybody thought the Islanders were in for a rebuild. They trade Noah Dobson. Everything's starting to refresh itself. You're going to get rid of the older guys. You get rid of Brock Nelson. Everything's going to transition. You're going to build around this draft pick. You're going to build around the younger players. All of a sudden, Matthew Schaefer comes in, and he plays the way he played this season. Then they go on this run, and it's like, okay, hold on a second. Let's pump the brakes on this rebuild. We actually have a good team. This kid has just switched this team. He did a complete 180. Will Gavin McKenna do this to the Toronto Maple Leafs? I don't think he'll do it on his own. I think they would have switched it up with or without him because they all had a down season and it was just a terrible season for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They had too good of players to not be better next year. I don't think he moves the needle like a Macklin Celebrini moves the needle. I don't think he moves it like a Matthew Schaefer moves the needle. This kid is good. And the reason I don't think he moves that needle is the needs in Toronto are not what he does. If that makes sense to you, if they needed offense, if they needed creativity, like the San Jose Sharks needed creativity, they needed a punch up front, then I think he moves the needle. Toronto doesn't need that. Their defense is garbage. Like, I'm talking bottom five in the league. They're right there with the Edmonton Oilers. And they don't even, and Evan Bouchard gets a lot of crap. He does a lot of good things. Toronto does not have that. Chris Tanev, injured. Who knows his status? Brandon Carlo, always injured. Who knows his status? Morgan Riley, where is he going to end up this offseason? Nobody knows. You got OEL. You got Troy Stetcher, who was a waiver wire pickup. Simone Benoit sucks. Jake McCabe is too old and weather-worn. They have no prospects in the system. This D core, I would get rid of all of it if I could. If I'm John Chyka, I would try to get six new defensemen in there. And tell, shoot me if I'm wrong. All of these guys suck. Toronto is atrocious on the back end. Does Gavin McKenna all of a sudden fix that issue? No. The goaltending was an issue all season long. You got Wall. You got Hildeby who came in. You obviously got Stolarz who's been injured in another lineup. If any one of those guys are healthy, do you trust them to be an NHL goaltender? No, they have not done anything to deserve our trust. Maybe Joseph Wall, he's had the longest stretch of playing solid goaltending. But do I consider him a starting A1 goaltender in the NHL? Maybe. Definitely not Stolarz. Definitely not Hildeby. They need to address that. And I've said it up and down on this podcast. You don't need a superstar goalie to win the Stanley Cup. You just need a guy who's going to stop the pucks that he's supposed to stop. There are goals that will go in. What I don't need a goaltender to do is to implode and just self-destruct and to let in terrible beach ball style goals that just drain a team, that just change the way you play the game. And Wall and Hillaby and Stolarz seem to be prone to doing those things. And it doesn't help that their defense is just porous in front of them. So going back to the number one overall pick, and then we'll move on. It's great for the franchise. It's a great thing to distract all the fans away from the issues on this team. But at the end of the day, does it help this team in the long run? Not really. Not really. Does this change Austin Matthews' decision in the next few years? Potentially. If I'm Austin Matthews and I look at this young kid, I go, "Yeah, geez, I can play with this guy for the next 5, 6, 7 years. That sounds fun." But is he going to increase my chances to win a Stanley Cup? No. No, he won't. So the issues are still there. The cancer is definitely still in the body. Toronto still has a ton of work to do this offseason, and they have very, very little margins to do it in. John Chyka, if anything, he's the one who enjoys this the most. Because coming in, obviously, he signs the big ticket. He's now the Toronto Maple Leafs' new GM. Pressure is on before the draft lottery. What are you going to do? You got to do your due diligence. You got to go out and you got to scout. He has not been known to be a good draft when he's been the GM. He is not one for analyzing potential players and, you know, doing his scouting and all that pre-draft analysis. All of his picks have sucked when he was in Arizona. None of them really panned out, except his first year when he got hired 2 weeks before the draft. And I think they already had their draft process in order, and that he wasn't really a part of that. And they went out and they got a couple good young players. I think it was Lawson Crouse and somebody else, Clayton Keller potentially. Other than that one draft, all of his picks have kind of fallen flat. So he was coming into his first parlay as a Toronto GM. Now he gets gifted the number one overall pick. He doesn't have to do anything. He's like, boom, done. And if you think he's trading this pick, you're crazy. This pick gives John Chyka at least 3 to 5 years as a GM. Because if he goes into this draft and he gets a second, third, fourth overall pick, it will always be criticized. Because it was always, oh, should you get the defenseman? Should you get Ivan? Should you go for a forward? Who should you get? There's always the guy behind you who maybe is going to be a little bit better, and that's stressful. Now he doesn't have to think about anything. It's Gavin McKenna. That's it. And no-brainer. The guy is the best player, and you should pick him, rightfully so. So John Chyka loves this. It extended his GM career for a long time, and the Toronto Maple Leafs should be happy about this because it just distracts away from everything that they have going on. Because this, and let's not get it twisted, this team sucks. And this team will continue to stink because Gavin McKenna can't fix their problems. He can distract away from it. You can look at the shiny new toy. Look over here, look over here. You know, the dancing bears for Stalin. Meanwhile, he's murdering millions of people in the gulag. Oh, dancing bears, distract, distract, distract. Gavin McKenna, look away, Gavin McKenna, number one overall pick. The gaping wound that is the goaltending issue and the cancerous tumor that's just everywhere that is the decor that's just going to kill you. But oh, shiny new toy, Gavin McKenna. I love it. It's good for Toronto because this means they're going to stink a lot longer because this guy doesn't fix their problems. All right, moving on. Let's get into the Colorado Avalanche because I think we're taking for granted how good the Avalanche are right now. And we have just grown accustomed to them winning. And it's sad because they have faced a tough road to get here. Now they're playing the Minnesota Wild. And I'm not saying they're making it look easy, but the Minnesota Wild took out the Dallas Stars fairly easily. Dallas had an unprecedented regular season. They had dealt with injuries. They come in, not an unprecedented. They had a good regular season. I get on a roll where I start saying these words and I just throw them out there. But no, they had a good regular season. Top five in the NHL. And the Minnesota Wild, I'm not saying they made it look easy, but the Stars were flying on the power play. And if they didn't have that, Minnesota would have walked right through them. They dominated them 5-on-5. They win that first round in 6 games. They go and they play Colorado. Colorado is making them look pedestrian, which is insane. Because with a team like Kirill Kaprizov and Hughes and Boldy and Zuccarello and all these great players and Brock Faber, to look, and pedestrian might be a strong word, but to look just how they look. They beat them 9-6 in game one, and it was just a goal-scoring spree. Colorado did whatever they wanted. They scored at will, and rightfully so. You can say the same for the Minnesota Wilds, but not 9 goals. And then in game two, the Avalanche just worked them 5-2. It is a very workmanlike win for the Colorado Avalanche. And the thing that stands out for me, and I think everybody's touched on it, is Nathan McKinnon looks like a man possessed. On the podium after the game, when he's answering questions, it looks like he's a tortured soul, where he's staring off into the abyss because he's just driven on one singular goal. And he's not going to be satisfied until he wins a Stanley Cup. And this guy, like we talk about Zegras's, we talk about Caulfields, we talk about all these other teams that their top guys are not producing. When you look at the Colorado Avalanche and you look at who's leading them and who's leading the way, it is the top guys. McKinnon has 10 points in 6 games. Landeskog has 7 points. In 6 games, then it's Martin Nietzsche, it's Lykkanen, it's Kale McCarr, it's Devin Taves, it's Nazim Kadri, it's Nichushkin. Those are their top guys. Those are the ones who are leading the way. And that doesn't mean, you know, Jack Drury and Logan O'Connor and Brock Nelson aren't putting up points, because they are. But their top guys are dominating, and they're going head-to-head with the other team's top guys. And they are beating them in every facet of the game. In the corners, you want to go in, McKinnon buries Matt Boldy, like takes his soul from his body and says, suck on this. And it's the end of the game, and I'm still going to bury you into the boards when I don't even need to. Destroying him, sending a message for game three that this is my puck, this is my game, I will do what I want. Landeskog dominating up and down the ice. Kale McCarr just throwing floaters on the net that find the way to the back of the twine. It's just everybody is rolling. But I've said it before, and I've said it a million times, a series does not start until a road team wins. A road team loses. Or excuse me, a home team loses and a road team wins. Listen, it's Saturday morning. I'm probably concussed. Give me a break. So Minnesota could bounce back. But unlike the Carolina Hurricanes, where, you know, they're susceptible to things, and Philadelphia could have won the first 2 games if they would have got a couple bounces if their top guys score, I don't see a way Minnesota wins those first 2 games. Game one, they were lucky to be in it. Game two, they had no chance. So I don't see a world where they go in and win 2 games in Minnesota. Colorado is just too good. And the question I have to ask myself is, like, will they lose? The toughest competition that Colorado could face in these playoffs are the Minnesota Wild. Right? Or am I wrong? What other team in the NHL is better than Minnesota? It sure as hell not Vegas. It sure as hell isn't Anaheim. Is it out east? Is it Buffalo or Montreal? I don't know. Is it Carolina with their systems and able to shut teams down? You tell me, will Colorado be the first team ever to just roll through the playoffs and not lose a game? I don't see a team that can compete with them. The only way I think they lose a game is if they get undisciplined, they take penalties, and the other team gets a couple goal lead, and then they just hold on for dear life. Because this team looks so incredibly good. They are now 6-0 in these playoffs, and they have not been tested whatsoever. They have been dominant. The top guys have been dominant, and it's been very, very fun to watch. And going back to Carolina, who's 7-0, I am way, way, way more confident in Colorado. They got tested a little bit versus LA in the first round in the first two games in Colorado. They won 2-1, 2-1. Ever since then, it's just been easy as she goes, steady as she goes. It's been a very dominant playoff so far from the Colorado Avalanche, and they're doing it from their top guys. Their defense is playing solid. And at the end of the day, I've said it for years, how do you win championships? It's down the middle. And can anybody compete with MacKinnon, Brock Nelson, and Nazem Kadri? I don't think you can. And when you look at that back end, when you look at the goaltending that they've been getting, they have no weakness whatsoever. So, yeah, right now, the Avs by far head and shoulders if I'm a betting man. And I'm not, but I should be. I need a gambling sponsor. If you know somebody, throw them my way. They are 100% going to win the Stanley Cup. There's no doubt in my mind. The next team, could I say the Buffalo Sabres? I want to. I should. All right. Last one. One of my other former teams. Everybody's giving the Toronto Maple Leafs all the accolades and all the attention. The team that should be the most happiest about this draft lottery are the San Jose Sharks. Don't look now, but they have sneakily, maybe not so sneakily, put together the best stockpile, should we say. They got a bunch of good young players who are hell of a players, and they're already in the NHL and they're already producing. The last 3 years, they got Will Smith. I know they got William Eklund 5 years ago, so maybe we can include him. So you get William Eklund, you get Will Smith, you get Macklin Celebrini, you get Sam Dickinson, you get Michael Misa, you get the goaltender Ravensbergen. Now you get the number two overall pick. So that is three straight years with lottery pick. Is Will Smith a lottery pick? Lottery's top three. Will Smith would be four. So four straight years of top five picks. And now this year, you luck out and you get a lottery pick. After battling all season long and almost making the playoffs, you get another gift. So if I'm Mike Greer, I could not be happier because I get to get another grade A forward, either Ivar Stenberg coming out of Sweden, who is just probably the safest prospect out of all the people across the board in this draft. He maybe doesn't have the high of a ceiling as Gavin McKenna, but he is NHL ready. He's been playing professional in Sweden for the last couple of years, and he is fantastic. He's a great winger. He can drive the play. You can put him alongside somebody. He can be a secondary option, or he can, you know, make people better around him. Or you go defenseman. Their decor isn't that great. Do you go Chase Reed from the Sioux, Ontario, who's going to MSU? You go another direction. I think, what's his name? Carters or whatever. There's a couple other defensemen that you could go. But all of a sudden, over the last 3, 4, 5 years, the San Jose Sharks have gone from cap hell, trying to jettison everybody. You had Hurdle, you had Couture, you had Burns, you had Pavelski, you had so many other bad contracts. Eric Carlson. And then you fast forward to now, and you go, damn, this team will win the Stanley Cup within the next 5, 6 years. That's how good these players are. Celebrini is a superstar. Will Smith is a star. I don't think we've seen the best of Dickinson. Michael Misa showed glimpses last year. They're fantastic. And now you're going to add another high-end forward or a high-end defenseman on the back end. If it's me, if I'm Mike Greer, I'm getting that Stenberg kid. I'm not playing around and maybe fill holes. I'm taking the best player available. But they are by far the winner of this lottery. I know McKinnon and Toronto, we've said that's great. The biggest needle mover from this draft will be whoever Mike Greer picks. Because you better believe San Jose will make the playoffs next year. And these young kids will ride that youthful wave into the playoffs, into a weak Western Conference. They're going to be something to deal with. That Pacific division better get ready for the Sharks to dominate that division because they are very, very close to being a very dangerous team. The only team that I can compare them to from the last couple of years, 10, 15 years, who had a lot of lottery picks are obviously the Edmonton Oilers. When they went, who did they go? They went Taylor Hall. They went Yakupov. They went the Nuge. And then obviously Connor McDavid. And that didn't really pan out. I think it was too many Chiefs, not enough Indians there. San Jose doesn't seem to have that problem. You have the obvious leader in Macklin Celebrini. And you have a nice, humble kid like Will Smith who kind of knows his role. And Michael Misa doesn't seem to want much publicity. And then Dickinson on the back end seems to be a mild-mannered kid. In Edmonton, it seemed like Neil Yakupov loved the stardom. He wanted to be the guy. When it didn't happen, he maybe got a little upset. Connor McDavid was the guy, maybe didn't want that. And then Taylor Hall was there and he didn't really want that. There, it just didn't seem to work. It works in San Jose. It looks like it will work. So them getting the number two overall pick, it's a kick to the teeth to the Chicago Blackhawks and the Vancouver Canucks and the New York Rangers. It's very funny that they get just bamboozled in the draft lottery, and then you give it to the Sharks, who are just overflowing with young talent, and the Leafs, who really don't even need it. So it's very funny. But yes, San Jose Sharks start planning the parade. I'm guessing 2030, 2031, you will get your Stanley Cup. Toronto, cancel the parade. It's not helping whatsoever. Avs this season, start planning it. Canes, I'm sorry, I'm not sold yet. But thanks, everybody, for listening. I appreciate this. I'm going to cap it at 35 so I don't waste my time for the next 10 minutes. I hope everybody's having a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week. Cheers.